Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, November the 4th, 2011. I'm Tom Collier in for Bill Buckmaster, who's enjoying a long weekend in Santa Fe. Bill will be back in the land of really good Mexican food on Monday. Thank you for joining us and choosing our program. We're live Monday through Friday at noon on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and the Voice Network with our simulcast partners in Douglas at 9:30 a.m. on KAPR and in Globe on KJAA AM 1240 on the dial. And we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com, where shows are archived for 24/7 listening. And also, thanks to our partnership with the online news service TucsonSentinel.com, and our shows are also available anytime at TucsonSentinel.com and this week at TucsonCitizen.com. Fridays on the Buckmaster Show begin with the Friday Focus featuring a newsmaker interview, and then at the bottom of the hour, it's the Friday Reporters Roundtable. And we close out the show with the Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, the culinary cruiser, who'll give you some tips about how you can spend money on the weekend and have a great time, too. Today's Friday Focus newsmaker is with newsmaker interview is with Mike Varney, the CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. Joining me to question Mr. Varney is Mark Evans of the TucsonCitizen.com. We welcome you to join in the conversation on the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040 or toll-free from anywhere in North America at 866-725-5467. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at splendidoaz.net. Mr. Varney, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Tom. Very nice to be here.
I was going
to
say, well, you made it through your first Tucson summer, but hey, you came here from North Las Vegas, so that's kind of moot.
Yeah, pretty close, same climate up there. A little drier, but still the Southwest, which my wife and I love very much.
Are you getting everything whipped into shape?
I wouldn't say everything, but we've made pretty good progress, I think, and whipping it into shape.
If somebody would say, what's the largest change that you've made at the Tucson Metro Chamber, what would that be?
I would have to answer that, Tom, by saying that we've really energized a lot of people who can contribute to the mission of the chamber. We have what we think is very solid alignment between the board of directors, and we have a fantastic board of directors at the Tucson Metro Chamber. They, of course, are charged with the responsibility of giving the staff and the other volunteers the direction where they want to see the business community go. And it was our job then to make sure that we aligned the staff and we aligned other volunteers, our committee volunteers and non-board level volunteers all behind the same mission and kind of got everybody walking in step. And I think that that's probably the one thing that I would say has really contributed to the efficiency and the effectiveness of the new Tucson Metro Chamber.
You go ahead, Mark.
In the 5 or 6 months that you've been here, obviously when you were moving here, you thought you were moving to Tucson and had your impressions of it. Now that you've lived here 6 months, have your impressions changed at all, you know, from what you thought you were getting into to what you've actually got yourself into in terms of the community, not necessarily the chamber?
No. We enjoyed the monsoons a lot this summer. We don't get a lot of those didn't get a lot of those in Las Vegas. I really have to say that I think some of the issues that I was clearly aware of when I took the position have just begun to define themselves a little bit better. I really haven't experienced any major surprises along the way, Mark. It's been a wonderful 6 months here. We're looking forward to making great progress in the remaining 6 months of my first year here. And so I think that in terms of big surprises, no. Clarity on what we knew were going to be challenges, yes.
When the Tucson Metro Chamber takes a stand on an issue, it doesn't just fall out of the sky that it's going to be that way. How do you develop that? And let me mention Rosemont, for example,
sure.
And prepare for the phone lines to light up.
Okay. Well, we welcome all callers. The Chamber's position on Rosemont was in place when I got here. My first day here in Tucson was May 9th. The Chamber had already staked out a position on Rosemont then, and I think it was a pretty smart position for them to take. And their position was this, that Rosemont must meet the technical standards and regulations called for by the U.S. Forest Service, the ultimate licensing and governing body for mine operations in the country. that Rosemont needs to comply with all of the environmental and operational aspects called for by the U.S. Forest Service, and that if they comply and they meet or exceed those regulations, that there is no legitimate reason why that company should be prevented from going into business.
Has the chamber taken into consideration some of the arguments that are being made recently, especially in the county, that where we would gain some jobs through copper mining, we could actually lose some jobs perhaps with the astronomers having to move because they're not able to see as well as they could before the mine went into operation, or other effects that there might happen where businesses are no longer able to thrive because of the mine came in? So you'd have job gains on one hand and job losses on the other. Did you factor that in, and do you agree with that assessment that the county's come up with?
Well, if we boil all that down, to start a mining operation the size of Rosemont's, there are going to be changes. And we have to accept the fact that there will always be changes in our community of one kind or another. This is a $9 billion opportunity that we have to take a very serious look at and weigh whatever Rosemont will bring to the community against any possible, and I underscore that word, possible losses in other areas. Nobody yet has pointed out to me any objective data or any objective information that points to the fact that we're going to lose one single job. Now, could that happen? Sure, it could happen. But there are a lot of other benefits to Rosemont beyond the jobs that are directly connected to the mine. The existing copper mines that we have here in southern Arizona are a tremendous tourism draw. Those are some extra jobs and dollars for our community that aren't factored into the mining operation. So sure, we could lose a job here or there, but I think in the long run, the net gain will be tremendous. I doubt that a mining operation, again, I don't know this because I don't have any objective data, I doubt that a mining operation is going to greatly impair anybody's ability to look through their telescope and see anything in the heavens. I doubt that it's going to raise the kind of dust that some people think that it will, because Rosemont is required to mitigate that dust. So there are all kinds of issues. We're dealing with the facts. We're not dealing with the what-ifs and the fear that some people are advancing.
And back to Tom's question, what is the process for how the chamber decides where it's going to fall on a particular issue? Is it a vote of the general membership or just of the executive board?
Yeah.
And speaking of which, what's the membership these days?
Okay. Membership right now is about 1,350 members. The process, and I'm sorry I didn't give you a more complete answer to that question the first time around, Tom. If it's a policy position where the chamber is deciding between choice A or B or C, whatever the criteria might be, the board of directors typically will discuss that, debate it sometimes, and they will come out with a decision that they feel fairly represents the business community that they represent. The board of directors are nothing more than the representative democracy of the entire 1,350 members of our organization. So they are really elected to debate and decide these kinds of matters. If it's not a policy decision, a lot of times the executive staff will take care of those matters. But when it comes to policy, government and otherwise, it's generally the board.
We're talking with Mike Varney, the CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, and with me is Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. To the issue of policy development, we talked about one policy, Rosemont, which was already in place when you came here. What other issues are being developed through the processes that you have in place at the chamber? And when can we expect maybe to hear some pronouncement
sure.
on them?
Well, a couple fairly recent debates that we've had include the position that the chamber is taking on the search for the new city manager. Our chamber board debated that and decided to send a message to the city that we back a national search for a highly qualified city manager. We feel that if we cast a bigger net, we are going to catch more qualified prospects. Now, I don't want anybody to interpret that as, well, that prospect, that next city manager could not come from Tucson. The next city manager could well come from Tucson, but I think we all need to know that the best candidate is the one that we'll be putting into office in that important position. Along with that is a sister issue, which is the change in the city charter. I'm hearing from both sides of the aisle very loud voices about the need to get that done, to increase the accountability that all of our public servants have, and to have somebody who's actually steering the ship. Right now, there's just no captain of the ship with the current city charter structure that we have.
The change in the charter specifically would be to
– to either go to a strong mayor – well, I can't predict what it will be, but the two general –
what you're advocating.
Yeah, what we're advocating is somebody at the top of the pyramid, somebody who's ultimately accountable and somebody who has the authority to make the kinds of systemic and personnel changes that it's going to take to be sure that we've got a smoothly operating city government. Typically, that would fall into the category of either a strong mayor model or a strong city manager model.
So the city, the chamber has endorsed candidates in the election for next week. You've endorsed Rick Connell for mayor, Tyler Vogt for council, and also Paul Cunningham is a Democrat for council. What was the process in making those decisions? And if you could just speak briefly to all three, why the chamber thought those three candidates in particular?
Sure. The we actually have a bipartisan group of people serving on the chamber's political action committee, the Committee for Responsive Government. There was a 10-question questionnaire that was the same 10 questions put to all of the candidates, and this bipartisan or nonpartisan group of people scored the answers that all of the candidates gave to those same 10 questions. Out of that came the Political Action Committee's recommendations for endorsement. They were sent to the chamber's board. The chamber board looked them over and we announced them. And just so that we have the proper division that we have to have legally, the chamber is announcing the recommendations of the chamber's political action committee. And I think we all know with the regulations that nonprofits have to deal with that that is something that we need to be very mindful of. But going to the recommendations, the Rick Rennell endorsement came out because for a lot of different reasons. I was not party to these interviews. I was actually out of town when they took place. But based on what I've been told, this nonpartisan group of interviewers felt that Rick had a very, very good sense of what it's going to take to create the accountability in city government that will result in a higher level of functionality, responsibility, and accountability at City Hall, that he, because he's been in private business for so long, really understands what it's going to take to get Tucsonans back to work. And I think people were impressed with the fact that Rick has been a fixture at city council meetings for years. He understands the budget. He understands the players. He understands the processes. And so the committee felt very, very comfortable that Rick would be the best choice for mayor. As for the council people, I think somebody that I spoke to who was in on those interviews said it best. When it comes to the choice between Shirley Scott and Tyler Vogt, that Shirley's assets were also her liabilities. 16 years in one place, and we still do not have a smoothly functioning city government, and that we've lost, somehow managed to lose $230 million through Rio Nuevo, is something that we do you really want to have more of that, assuming that that would be the future direction? In the case of Paul Cunningham, Paul has a record in his short stint in his council position as doing tremendous outreach to the business community, clearly understands what we're up against, and is active proactively to resolve those issues.
We're talking with Mike Varney, the CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. With me is Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, and we'll talk more after the break.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
With 2 out of 3 people in this country overweight, you're not alone in wanting to shed some pounds. Now you can lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope. The physician-supervised program created by renowned Tucson cardiologist Dietmar Gahn and certified nutrition counselor Elizabeth Gahn. To learn more about Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, call 696-DIET or log on to dietofhope.org.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Welcome back to the Friday Focus Newsmaker interview here on the Buckmaster Show. We're talking with Mike Varney, the CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, and with me to question Mr. Varney is Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. The Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. Mark, you had a question you wanted to ask.
When we were talking about the city council, every city council election cycle, it seems like somebody was running on reforming the business code and making the city more friendly for business. Well, I've been living here for 20 years, and I've been hearing that for 20 years, and it never seems to get revised. And my estimation of the city is that there's more than 100 neighborhood associations. They are the political base of the council members, and the council tends to draw, you know, its strength from the neighborhood associations, and each individual neighborhood association tends to have strong opinions about new businesses coming in and the like. So from a chamber's point of view, how do you think that the council should be balancing the need to make it easier for businesses to do business in Tucson while at the same time allowing those neighborhood associations to feel like their peace and quiet is being protected as well as their property value?
Sure. And again, I have 6 months of history in dealing with these things, so I'm not sure
you'll get more.
I know it will. I'm not sure I can quote a lot of specific examples, but I will say from kind of the big picture perspective on that we need city government that's going to do things that benefit the most people the most often. We need to be thinking about our community, and community certainly does involve the neighborhoods. I don't minimize that a bit. But community is all of us. And I would say that, and maybe this is a little oversimplified, that if we have good building codes and ordinances and other things on the book that where we have laid down how the letter of the law is supposed to work, that any time there's a dispute, that that's the first place that we go. We look and we say, well, what does the law say about how we should be addressing this particular issue? And if there's a need to, then maybe you go back and you think about revising the ordinance or what have you. But I don't think that you approach every situation as though there is no established law or regulation or ordinance governing that. And I think if we've got good laws and good ordinances on the books, they're fair to everyone. Doesn't mean it's going to be fair to everybody every time, but that's always going to be in the eye of the beholder. But if we've got good ordinances, good regulations on the book, that's where we start to settle our differences.
At one point or another, people who move to Tucson or to the Tucson area recognize or realize that there is this ring of conservatives around a liberal city center, or you want to call it Republicans, you know, or in the suburbs, there is up in the foothills and around a city which is essentially a lot of Democrat registration. Mm-hmm. That creates some tensions and some problems periodically. Have you had an opportunity to look at and address and maybe come up with some solutions for that?
Yeah,
if you come up with a solution, you're a miracle worker,
well,
by the way.
I have some observations. I have no magic wand for that, but I do have some observations. I had a wonderful conversation several weeks ago with Satish Hiremath, mayor of Oro Valley. And Satish told me about his first few weeks in office and some of the battles that he had to fight. A battle that I think he's still fighting is a great way to answer at least one dimension of that question, Tom. He said that Oro Valley may be a municipality with defined borders, but anything that happens in Tucson is going to affect Oro Valley. It's going to affect Marana. It's going to affect Green Valley. It's going to affect the unincorporated areas of the county. It's just another way for him to say we are all in this together. We may live in different jurisdictions. We may do different things and so forth. But we're all going to rise and fall together here. And I think that that's one thing that the chamber, I think you'll see us working towards is let's all get together and let's all work together here. We've got a very polarized national political scene right now. The us and them battles are legendary, and we're not getting anything done. So our view, I think, will be to marginalize the wing nuts on both sides of the political aisles, take that great group of practical, pragmatic people in the middle and start rolling up our sleeves and solving some problems. So I would say that is one way to answer that question. The other way to answer that question, quite frankly, came from Dr. Michael Crow, the president of Arizona State University, who did a wonderful presentation on the subject of regionalism at the most recent TRIO luncheon. And he talked about the fact that if we're going to grow, we all have to grow. And in his concept, the region, what he calls the Sun Corridor, is Scottsdale down to Green Valley. That's the region that we all have to find a way to promote, because that region is competing against the Dallas regions and the Massachusetts regions and the Silicon Valley. And if we don't come together and start regionalizing and solving our problems on that level, we're just going to continue to throw rocks at each other and not get anywhere.
Which is a perfect segue into my question about a Chamber of Commerce issue. Every 8 to 10 years or so, there's a blow up, and you got small business saying that the Chamber of Commerce doesn't care about them and their issues, and so they form a rump group that goes off and maybe lasts for a year and is popular for a year, and then it fades away. And when you look at the Tucson area, you've got, what, 8 ethnic chambers of commerce and 6 or 7 regional chambers of commerce and a couple of ideological chambers of commerce like the GLBT Chamber of Commerce. And they all say they were all formed at a point where they said the Chamber of Commerce, and this is before your time, wasn't taking care of them and wasn't looking at their issues. In the couple of minutes that we have left, how do you address that? Are you talking about working together and working for the benefit of everyone?
Yeah. You're right, there are a number of chambers here in our immediate metro area. And each has it. There's a phrase in our industry that says if you've seen one chamber, you've seen one chamber. There are some similarities to be certain, but each chamber generally has its own agenda and program of work. And in their world, they're doing important work, and we don't minimize the role that any other chamber plays.
How about cooperation, though?
We are looking at heightened ways to cooperate. We will always be, and I don't know that everybody agrees with this, we will always be in a sense of what we call co-opetition. That some businesses are going to have to make choices between one chamber or another because the budget won't allow them to join two. Now, there's other businesses that might join two, three, four chambers, and we certainly understand that and welcome anybody to join our chamber. So there will be some level of competition. There will be some level of cooperation. As to your question about the chamber's relevance to small business, I would invite anybody who's a small businessman or businesswoman to take a look at the new chamber and the wonderful program that our Small Business Growth Committee, a group of small business owners, has put together to help you make money, save money, get connected, and access knowledge transfer.
Mike Varney, CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, thank you so much for being with us on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you.
We'll come back in a couple of seconds, and we'll have our reporter roundtable.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The government of Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou is teetering ahead of a confidence vote by Greek lawmakers scheduled for a few hours from now. Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney is unveiling a plan that he says will fundamentally reshape Medicare. Federal prosecutors in Texas are looking into a video that shows a judge lashing his teen daughter with a belt. The daughter, who's now 23, posted the video from 7 years ago online last week. Authorities now say a report of an exploding package and white powder at a West Virginia post office turned out to be nothing more than a malfunctioning fluorescent light bulb. On Wall Street, heading into the final half hour of trading today, the Dow is down about 104 points. More details at srnnews.com.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit PyramidFCU.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My Foot Doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pedorthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and 5th. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, the voice and the voice network over Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Each Friday about this time, we present the Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists, and they're sounding off in this week's top stories. You can join me on the Friday Roundtable and call us on the show live line at 790-2040. And we've got Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com to talk about the events of the week. There's nothing to talk about, is there?
No, we should just wrap it up here, I think. We're good.
Where to begin? Well, let's talk about what the redistricting commission, what they did to Colleen Mathis.
It's basically the Republicans in the state legislature and Governor Brewer really don't seem to like how redistricting is going, although it seems to favor them more often than not.
Yeah, I don't know if they've done any favors for themselves. They've been setting this stuff, this action up all year. I mean, long before there were ever any maps, long before there were ever any allegations of meeting law open meeting law violations, they've been complaining about the commission. They complained about the commission before there was a commission. They were trying to get certain people that they didn't want to have to be on it. And
You think it might be kind of a case if they got this ball rolling so early, it had so much momentum that they really couldn't even stop it, though redistricting is kind of helping them and giving them more guaranteed seats?
If they didn't get the maps that they wanted, then they had set the stage to replace the commissioners that weren't playing ball with them and get the commission they want. The problem is now the appellate court commission now is supposed to be meeting on Monday. We don't know whether they're going to come up with a short list, but there's a list of independents who applied for
this.
This
is the mechanics of how the commission
works. So they applied to be on the commission back in February and went through this selection process with the Commission on Appellate Court Appointments. And so they're going to come up with a short list of three names.
It's a question, all independents.
All independents.
Well, it has to be. Yes,
and it's
right,
a question of whether they're going to use three of the five, the four remaining finalists that they had, and there's five others who didn't make the cut. So presumably they're going to go with their original list of finalists. And on that list, Ray Bladeen is now the executive director of AIRC, so he's out. And then Paul Bender, who used to work in the Nixon administration, he was the one that the legislature was trying to get kicked off the list to begin with. So it seemed impractical that they would – or not, improbable that they would choose him. And that leads to other people that we've never heard of.
Meanwhile, there's going to be a lot of lawyers making a lot of money because Colleen Mathis is going to fight this.
Right, concurrent to that process, Mathis and the commission. The commission has also filed as well, along with her. So
there are two requests for the court to hear.
So Mathis' own attorney and then also the commission's attorney have filed with the Supreme Court. Now, I don't think
they
the Supreme
haven't accepted
court,
it yet, have they?
I don't know. Morning when I came in here, but I don't think the courts are going to want to dive into this. I mean, unless there's some sort of egregious violation of due process, I just don't see them wanting to step into an inherently political process. That's separation of powers. They're not going to do it.
Oh, the complicating matters is one of the members of the state Supreme Court sits on the commission that selects people, so she's had to recuse herself, and a retired judge has to step up and review this with the court.
Once the appellate court commission makes its recommendations, that gives them 14 days. There was some speculation that what the Republicans were really after was trying to wait this out until January, when a lot of the appointment commission members' terms expire, and then Jan Brewer would be able to replace them, and you would perhaps get more Republican friendly independents, if you will. So I don't see how this is going to solve any problems for them. I think they're stuck with these maps unless they want to blow them up and start all over again. Yeah. And that means we won't have maps until, March or April. People won't know what district they're in to be out doing fundraising.
The members of the legislature, yeah.
Members of the legislature, members of Congress even.
Right.
They're open air.
There's a time constraint which is driving this whole process.
A time constraint, and there's also the fact that Arizona is under extra legal review by the U.S. Justice Department because of past discrimination. So not only does this commission have to come up with maps, but then they have to be submitted to the federal government, and the feds have to look at them and approve them. So that even could drag things out a bit longer.
The first or second week of July is when the various recorder's offices, election departments, have to start printing their ballots for the September or August primary. So everything has to be done. You have to have your maps by July. But
if this drags into March, then that doesn't give a lot of time.
Right, and you won't know what district you're even to even raise money.
Well,
you know?
aren't there FEC federal fundraising deadlines?
I Absolutely.
Think the beginning of April, federal candidates are supposed to file with their committees. I guess they could decide afterwards.
Well,
and
having done this, the legislature has a plan, don't they?
Yeah.
Think the Senate
I mean,
has a plan?
That's the thing that's bewildered me about this whole thing. Yes, the Republicans are mad. They don't like the maps. They've thrown a temper tantrum. They've thrown their weight around, and they can do it. They've got the governor, and they've got the supermajority in both houses. But what's the end game here? I mean,
there is a chance that this ends up going before a judge somewhere, and they'll have maps imposed for them. Mm-hmm. And those maps may well end up being less favorable than the draft
exactly.
maps that exist.
Because that judge isn't going to take anybody's consideration into it. She's, you know, whoever it is going to get somebody to draw some competitive maps, and that's going to be the end of it. Yeah. And those will be temporary maps until we can get our act together, you know.
For people who want to sound off on this, there's a meeting, I believe it's this evening
in
Marana, and then tomorrow morning in Green Valley.
How about for people who want to sound off right now, they can call us on our live
absolutely.
Line at 790-2040. Okay. Have we taken care of the redistricting commission?
We could ramble on for a while longer, but we should probably move on.
City elections up next week.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Democrats came out with a poll from a pretty high-powered Democratic consulting firm out of the East Coast that said that Rothschild was way ahead. But that poll came out before a whole bunch of money from Phoenix came into the Grinnell campaign, and he started hammering Rothschild on TV. So I think this race is going to tighten up a little bit. However, it may be that those ads are a little bit too late because most people have already voted because it's an all-male election.
The whole dynamic of campaigns in Tucson is going to have to change. People are used to dumping money in late to affect turnout on election day, and now that we have all mail-in ballots, most people who are motivated to vote do it early. You know, a good chunk of the ballots that are going to be turned in have already been turned in. So I don't know how much these ads that are coming out now are actually going to affect the race. They might turn out a few people who were on the cusp and likely voters, but as far as that, you know, big chunk of people in the middle, I don't know how much this late money is going to have an effect.
The real interesting thing for me is that the results will be released. Normally what happens on election night is the elections departments can't release results until 8 o'clock, 1 hour after the polls close. So at 8 o'clock, you get this first dump of initial results, and then slowly over the hours of the evening, more and more results come in as the precincts report.
Sometimes for days.
Right. But with this all-mail, you're going to find out, you know, right away what the overwhelming majority of voters said. But if it's really close, you won't know until all the late ballots that were either mailed in, you know, that showed up on Tuesday or that got dropped off on Tuesday get counted.
So there won't be a sophisticated algorithm to call the winner just on the basis of the
well, if somebody's got a double digit lead, you'll be able to call
it. If somebody's up comfortably,
that kind of money on Tucson.
The only one right now that I'm really comfortable with saying is I think Paul Cunningham's a done deal. I think he won, but I think it's going to be really tight for Shirley Scott against Tyler Vogt. And you know, I was thinking maybe Rothschild, but I think Grinnell may have closed the gap. It just depends on how many people haven't voted.
I'm calling the Ward 1 race right now. I think
I'm comfortable with that. Let's write this down.
I forget that she's running for council.
There's my prediction. Yeah. Thank you very much. Political pundit that I am.
The punditocracy is one of the things. You wanted, for those who aren't particularly acquainted with Tucson politics, Ward 1 is?
Ward 1 is the West Side Ward that Regina Romero is the incumbent, the Democratic incumbent, and she doesn't face a Republican challenger. There's a Green running against her, and that's, you know, certainly, you know, history shows that's not going to be a very tight race.
She's not campaigning. She's not spending money. There's no signs up. I mean, she won. Yeah,
mark this moment. Dylan called Ward 1.
There you go.
I've already written that part of the election story.
But Ward 3, Shirley Scott, Tyler vote.
I think that's going to be they're pretty close. I mean, Shirley has been on the council long enough that she's got the biggest Rio Nuevo millstone hanging around her neck. And we already saw Rio Nuevo bump off one council member 2 years ago in
Nina Traceoff,
and nearly bumped off Karen Ulick. So, and now you've got another scandal. You know, the Arizona Daily Star reported today about this scandal of city workers using city construction equipment on private jobs and the like, which is just. Falls on the heels of the whole Parkwise scandal, which is on the 911 scandal, and that's not good for any sitting incumbent to have this slow creep of, you know, misbehavior going on in the city.
We'll see. I mean, there's a chance that race could be certainly. I think it'll end up a little bit tighter than that poll showed, where Shirley was up by 25 points in that poll, and that was a huge lead. But that's before her challenger started putting some money in and advertising, really. So if the Republicans can generate some turnout off of that, it's always an uphill battle for a Republican in the city of Tucson. In a city council election, people are elected citywide, and Democrats hold such a commanding registration edge over Republicans in the city that no matter what, it's a tough battle for them.
It's like
every
a 5-3
time.
Registration advantage.
Let me cast the net a little wider now and talk. We're talking about elections on November 8th. Up in District 18 in Mesa, there was a survey that was released earlier this week that showed State Senator Russell Pierce might actually have be defeated by Jerry Lewis, I believe.
Yeah, Lewis was up 3 points, I believe.
Yeah, but that's within the margin of error, right?
It's interesting the way both campaigns were spinning that. The Lewis campaign was, we're in the lead by 3, Pierce is going to lose, and the Pierce people were spinning it. It's a dead heat because it was in the margin of error. So I actually think that Pierce is going to lose.
Given the fact that the people who are his opponents are so incredibly motivated and focused on this race, they don't have to worry about any other legislative race. There's city elections going on in Phoenix, but that's not in his area up there, although a lot of the people who are opposing him are people from Phoenix and from Tempe who are putting money and effort and volunteering for Jerry Lewis, even though on any given day, they probably wouldn't agree with very much that Jerry Lewis stands for, because he's a very conservative Republican as well. But they like him a whole lot more than they like the architect of SB 1070, who's Russell Pierce.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of Democrats are going to vote for Lewis, and you're going to get some independents to vote for Lewis, and you're going to get a split vote amongst Republicans between Lewis and Pierce. You know, besides Pierce's stand on SB 1070, which is still a winning issue in Arizona, if you're against immigration, you're going to win your election. Unless your opponent's also against it, then you have to be really against it. Somebody help me out here. I lost my train of thought.
It's the wind. Blame it on the wind.
Blame it on the wind, right, which there is supposed to be a lot of today.
Indeed. It's getting up there.
Well, let me ask my two senior members of the punditocracy here, Dylan Smith with TucsonSentinel.com and Mark Evans with TucsonCitizen.com. If I only have $24.99 to spend on a book, which one should I buy? Gabby, Story of Hope and Courage, or should I buy Scorpions for Breakfast?
It depends on whether you're Republican or Democrat, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, are you looking for an emotional story, or are you looking for hard-boiled sort of a political treatise?
I just hope that this is the harbinger of Giffords returning to office. I mean, so she now is able to do interviews. She's able to travel. I don't have any inside knowledge whatsoever on the Giffords office or the Giffords campaign.
Just a couple of hours ago, though, when they were reviewing the coming book that Mark, her husband, wrote, she said that her goal is to return to Congress.
But that's her goal. Her problem, and you know, is aphasia. It's her ability to speak. And I think there's concern that if she can't speak very well, it's going to be hard for her to, you know, be in the Congress and convince people of her issues and to be out on the stump and to do public events and the like. But you know what? I mean, yeah, I don't think we've ever had anybody who's had that particular issue in the Congress, but we've had other people with disabilities in the Congress. I would like to see her try to overcome it and still be, even if she has aphasia, if she can still be the congresswoman from District 8.
Well, it's how she votes, not the kind of stirring stump speeches that she makes.
She was always such the consummate politician, always out there meeting people, hugging people, shaking hands, talking with her constituents. And, you know, if she can't do that anymore, that's certainly going to be a change in, you know, not only her personality, but the way she would have to run for office. But, you know, looking at how things are going, I think it's, you know, I don't have any special insight into it, but
Mark has
I'm starting to put my money on that she's going to make a stab at this again.
Mark has a point. It is new ground. It's never happened in a congressional race before.
Right. Yeah. So and something needs to happen soon. I mean, you know, she's got enough money that she can run. I mean, she's going to win no matter what if she runs. But
they're still raising money like they're running.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but you know, I mean, by January, that's 1 year after the event. I think we ought to know by then. So, but I'm going to be like most everybody else in Tucson. I'm going to be watching that ABC show the other day. The next couple days.
Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you. You've stirred up enough hornets for a Friday. So the Friday Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.com. And when we come back, things you can do on the weekend.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. 2 out of 3 people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET. Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. That music signals the official start of the weekend with on the Buckmaster Show, and we welcome Matt Russell for his Weekend Watch. Matt's a Tucson publicist and a dedicated foodie around town. He's the man Bill Buckmaster calls the culinary cruiser. Personally, the rattle of ice cubes starts my weekend. Matt, where would you recommend that we cruise to?
It's never too early to start the ice shaking, Tom, on a Friday afternoon. There's a lot going on for your listeners here this weekend and for foodies and cocktail enthusiasts alike. We're going to get started tonight down at Main Gate Square. Tom, this is Bear Down Fridays, and it's going to be tonight from 5 to 7:30. Of course, Main Gate Square, that glorious stretch of University Boulevard between Park.
Great venue. I was down there last week.
Great restaurants and bars, and this really is the community's official pep rally to get ready for the U of A football game. The Pride of Arizona band is going to be performing live music, great food and drink specials, and listen to this, it's free parking. From now on, down in Main Gate Square, after 5 o'clock, if you park in the Tyndall Garage, all the merchants are going to validate. So there's no excuse to come on down Friday and have a great time.
I always felt that if I could manage to back into those parking spaces down there, I deserved free parking anyway.
Yeah, that certainly takes a bit of a skill. Anyway, so if you didn't get enough to eat or drink tonight, I encourage your listeners to head on over to Kingfisher Bar and Grill tomorrow from 10 o'clock in the morning till 3. For all of the bivalve and mollusk fans you have in your listening audience, Kingfisher is going to be hosting their second annual Oyster Festival.
Okay, you're going to have to translate bivalve and mollusk.
Well, you know, these are the kinds of fish that live in shells that open on a kind of a hinge.
Ooh, good.
Right? Exactly. Mm. Think the old cartoon from the 70s. So Jim Murphy, who knows more about oysters than anyone else in this town, is bringing in oysters from the Pacific area, Northwest Gulf and Atlantic region. He's going to be serving them baked. He's going to be serving them in stew. Of course, he's going to be serving them, I think, the only way I like to enjoy oysters, and that's raw on the half shell.
Oh, yum. Yum, yum, yum.
That's going to be a lot of fun. And that is tomorrow, again, Saturday from 10 to 3 at Kingfisher, 2564 East Grant Road. And then to round out the weekend, Saturday night, I'm going to be getting over from Kingfisher over to Sunrise and Kolb at 6:30. Saturday is the first birthday celebration for one of my favorite restaurants, The Abbey, which was voted the best new restaurant in Tucson last year by readers of Tucson Lifestyle. They're celebrating their first birthday, and our good friends from Nova Financial Services, they've brought in a band from Nashville called Tin Cup Gypsy, and they're going to be performing, Tom, a free concert starting at 6:30 on Saturday night. Now, to go with the great music and the great drink and food specials, they're going to be serving up some birthday cake, and they're also going to be serving up a commemorative birthday cocktail, which is made with, get this, birthday cake-flavored vodka, Tom.
Birthday cake-flavored vodka.
It's going to make a delicious birthday cocktail to celebrate the Abbey's first birthday. There might be one or two spaces for dinner left. 299-3132 is the number to call. The entire Russell clan will be there in full regalia.
And how will we recognize you, sir?
Look for the guy who appears that he has let out one notch out of the belt after a wonderful weekend eating some great food in the Old Pueblo.
So let's recap. Bear Down Friday at Main Gate Square.
Tonight from 5 to 7:30.
The Kingfisher Oyster Fest.
Yep, Saturday.
And Kingfisher's located at
2564 East Grant Road. All kinds of great oysters and some great craft beers. And the rain should probably stop before the event starts. It's going to be a glorious day at Kingfisher.
And at the Abbey, that birthday cake-flavored vodka, that's worth investigating.
Is available starting at happy hour Saturday night. Stay for the concert at 6:30. It's a world-class band stopping through Tucson. Again, thanks to Nova Financial Services for making it all possible.
A man after my own heart and stomach, Matt Russell. Thank you for the weekend watch suggestions.
Thanks,
all right. Super. Friday Focus and the Friday Roundtable are presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more about Splendido at splendidoaz.net. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants. They're located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of The Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of the Buckmaster team, our producer, Rosemary Brandt, and the vacationing Bill Buckmaster, who will return on Monday, I'm Tom Collier. Have a wonderful and a safe weekend.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.